Here on the Let's Talk podcast, great to be joined by Tommy Olchek as we explore the life of a hockey player. Tommy, Jacob Wilkins, great to talk with you.
Hey, Jacob. Thanks a lot for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Of course. And you just got back from Australia. Was that hockey-related or leisure or post-graduation?
It was. I actually, a couple people approached my dad and knew I was looking to continue my pro hockey playing career. A bunch of pro hockey players went down to Australia the main purpose was to raise money for concussion research through a great foundation, Stop Concussions, which is run by Kerry Goulet and both former NHL Primo brothers. They run that. And then we also helped raise awareness for ice hockey in general because, the big things down there are rugby and Australian football and stuff like that. So being able to go and, play in some interesting venues, play ice hockey in front of, fans that don't get to see ice hockey very often was something very special.
And where were you in Australia, and then did you get to explore the continent, I guess, at all outside of hockey?
Well, we were actually all over. So the trip started in Melbourne, and then we went to Perth, then Adelaide, then Sydney, the Gold Coast, and we ended in Brisbane before the 13.5-hour flight back to Vancouver, where everyone originally met to fly there. But we had a lot of downtime as well. We were there for 3 weeks. We played. The only city we didn't play in a game in that I mentioned before was the Gold Coast. Just got some time to relax there, which was really nice. We got to go to some zoos, held a baby kangaroo, held a koala, explored around a little bit, and had a great time.
Yeah, okay, kangaroos. You think of Australia, that's that's right in there. Now, when you bring up concussion research, and obviously that's a topic not just in football but in hockey that's really gotten a lot of attention. And, you're a fairly young guy at 25. What was sort of the mindset of you guys in terms of what you've learned about concussions and ways to be more preventative and protecting your bodies and your brains?
I think it's a big thing. Even when I played at Penn State, my entire time there, we live in a time where concussion prevention and if someone gets a concussion, making sure they stay out, well long enough to the fact where they're not experiencing any symptoms before they return to the field of play. Luckily, I was very fortunate to never experience a concussion, knock on wood, obviously. But, my older brother had a bunch throughout his playing career. My dad definitely had a couple through his playing career. My little brother has gone through it as well. It's going to happen. I mean, any physical sport, concussions are going to happen. But instead of, throwing players right back into the field of fire, maybe they're your best player and you want to get them in there so you can win a game, a big game or something like that. But, you got to think of after hockey and stuff like that. So definitely, obviously preventing them. But, like I said, they're going to happen and, keeping guys out, the right amount of time before sending them back to play.
Yeah, and letting the listeners know that may not your dad, Eddie Olchek, who you see with Mike Emmerich on NBC Sports, NBC Sports Network, the Chicago Blackhawks, and of course played in the league for a while. You'll have to help me. Is Nicky your younger brother or Eddie?
Nicky. Nicky okay. is my younger brother. He's 19 years old. He'll be playing one more year of junior hockey before he goes to Colorado College. And my older brother, Eddie, as the assistant hockey coach at Niagara University.
Right. And so what have they told you on the concussion point, your dad, your brothers, personally, in terms of how to really take care of your body and, make sure that you're in good health?
At this point, a lot of guys used to fib to their trainers and tell them that they were doing, better than they were. I know that definitely happens with some guys. But, at this point, in today's day and age, both my brothers have told me, hey, you just got to be honest, because if you go back too soon from a concussion and you get hit again the wrong way or something like that, it could be extremely detrimental to yourself and, those people around you, obviously. So, you know, just being as completely open and honest with the people that are trying to help you. You know, your athletic trainers, you might think of them, you know, sometimes as your enemy, like they're trying to keep mm-hmm. you off the ice or off the field in whatever prospective sport that you're playing. But they just want what's best for you. They want you to be, you know, as close to 100%, you know, your whole body, obviously, but definitely in terms of concussions. Because, you know, hockey's a game where, you know what, you play a game, there's always something nagging you, whether it's, you know, an ankle injury, a little shoulder injury. You know, so very rarely are you at 100% in terms of, you know, your whole body. But in terms of, you know, head trauma and concussions and stuff like that, you know, what I've learned is you want to be at 100% in terms of what's going on in your head.
I forgot the player on the Rangers who unfortunately took his own life that wrote the book, and it was very powerful. And there's that discussion of the enforcer position. You were a forward. Is there been involvement at all? Obviously, there's always this sort of debate with fights and that being a staple of the game, but also when you're taking so many hits to the head. Is that something that you and the guys on the team, both Penn State and in Australia, have talked about?
You know, definitely. I think, you know, the college game's a little different.
Yep.
There's,
yep.
You know, very rarely, obviously, is there a fight or anything. But, you know, you still got guys out there that are more physical than others. And I think the NCAA, all the leagues associated with the NCAA in hockey have done a great job eliminating head checks. Or, you know, obviously head checks are going to happen, but being able to discipline them in a right manner to make sure that, you know, over the year or as the years go on, that, you know, the hits like that are limited, because that's a big thing. And the NHL has done the exact same things in terms of, you know, suspending guys for, you know, maybe not necessarily targeting heads. I think, you know, that has definitely dropped out of the game a lot, which is great. But, you know, sometimes incidental contact happens, but at the end of the day, you know, you're responsible for yourself. And if, you know, a guy's head gets in the way and you end up hitting it, you know, it's unfortunate and stuff. But like I said, those leagues have done a great job limiting that.
Right. And, you know, in college you have the protective face gear, I guess, or, you know, is that weird to wear? It always it seems different watching it when I watch a college hockey game.
Oh, it definitely is. I think maybe you feel a little bit safer.
Yeah.
You feel a little bit safer out there. And, you know, some of the guys might, you know, some players that I've played against or with might be a little more reckless on the ice than they would be if they were wearing, you know, just a visor or something. But, you know, it was definitely weird going from Sioux City in the United States Hockey League, where I played juniors, where I was wearing a visor for 3 years, and then going to play Penn State during my time there and wearing a cage the whole time. And, you know, right when I got home after I graduated, I took the cage off and threw a visor on my helmet because, you know, obviously I want to continue my hockey career, moving into pro hockey. And, you know, at the end of the day, this past season in college was my last time wearing a cage.
Yeah, and that's the perfect segue to going even before Sioux City. You know, it's always fascinating when someone comes from a hockey family as yours is. Was it a no-brainer to do hockey from the start, or did you even explore other sports?
It really wasn't a no-brainer. There was a few years of my life growing up where, you know, I was a pretty good baseball player growing up. I, you know, in the summers, I loved getting away from hockey, loved playing baseball. I think the last year I played, I was 16 years old. I just got to a point where, you know, I had to pick one or the other. And, you know, even though growing up in a hockey family and with my dad playing 16 years in the National Hockey League, I know that, you know, had I chosen baseball, he would have supported my decision 100%. You know, would I have ended up at Penn State if I chose baseball? I don't know. I can't say that I'm disappointed in the route that I took that ended up leading me to Penn State, because I had a great time there, and I definitely love that place.
Yeah, and we share that alma mater, of course, and I'm sure many Penn Staters will be listening. And tell me, when you think of the sort of development as a hockey player, you know, some high schools don't have hockey as a sport. Was it tougher? Did you have to do more travel teams than maybe, you know, each high school seems like it has a baseball team or a football team?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's only a few places where high school hockey is big, and that's, you know, Minnesota, it's gigantic, obviously, same in Wisconsin, and then out east, you know, in New England and, you know, places like that, they got a bunch of prep schools out there and stuff. But so, I mean, growing up, it was a lot, you know, in the Midwest as far as, you know, growing up in Chicago and, it's travel teams. So, you know, I'd have my friends at school, and then, you know, I'd have my friends on my travel team that came from, you know, all over the Chicagoland area to play together. So, like I said, I mean, high school hockey is only big somewhere, but, you know, the majority of the country, a lot of kids rely on playing travel hockey.
And was most of your childhood in Illinois? Obviously, your dad played for the Rangers. He had played for the Maple Leafs. Or were you moving around a lot?
Oh, I was definitely moving around a lot. Every time my dad got traded, you know, the family got went right along with him. Actually, the day that I was born, my mom was in labor with me in Toronto, and my dad got a call from the Maple Leafs, and he actually got traded to the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
The day I was born, my dad loves telling that story on that day whenever he's on the air or whatever. But yeah, just always moved around with him. So I played hockey you know, in a lot of different states, a few different provinces, and met some great people along the way, a lot of great people along the way, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
And, of course, you mentioned the Jets, the Penguins as well, the Blackhawks, L.A. Kings, so a lot of different places. Do you think moving around helped your development or in terms of being adaptable, or was it harder to sort of start over and develop a new relationship with a travel coach or teammates?
You know, it's definitely not easy, but I think over the years I developed a type of personality where, you know, I'm pretty easygoing. I'm open to change. Growing up, I never really had a choice but to be to be open to new experiences and things like that. So, you know, especially moving into playing pro hockey, you know, from now until I decide to hang up the skates, you know, I could be playing for several different teams or whatever. So having that, you know, that characteristic, being able to adapt to a new environment fairly quickly is definitely something that I think will help me moving forward.
And did your dad, I don't know if he coached you directly or was he always in your ear or did he take a more hands-off approach?
It was kind of a mix. I think he knew when I needed someone in my ear, and he was definitely there to do that. But then, you know, at the same time, you know, he didn't want to be too hard on me. So it was, you know, you allude to both those things, and, you know, it was kind of a mix of the two.
And, you know, you always wonder when, obviously there are more resources coming from a hockey family, but there can be pressure. So even with your older brother, were there constant battles between you two and your younger brother?
You know, not really too badly. My older brother and I are only about a year and a half apart, and then my little brother and I are about 6 years apart. So, you know, I played on the same team as my older brother a couple times, and you know, obviously we were competitive with each other a little bit, but nothing too extreme. And then, unfortunately for my little brother, you know, we definitely picked on him a lot, but I think that's going to help him moving forward. So when he plays with an edge, I tell him, get on the ice and just imagine that Eddie and I are out there giving you a hard time, and then I'm sure he'll perform better.
And your sister and mom, are they into the game? Or obviously your mother by default, I think, would have to have some interest. But directly, are they involved or do they want something totally different?
No, I mean, they're kind of just, you know, on their own page. Obviously, they love coming to support us, and they're always want the best for us. But obviously, they love the game. They love seeing us have success. You know, but they kind of do their own thing, which is good for them.
Yeah, and as you're getting towards the end of high school, while most people, I assume, are, you know, looking at continuing going into college, community college, four-year university, was that a thought process in terms of going through the recruiting process, or did you think that the USHL or another league was a better option?
No, I definitely knew, you know, going into school right away is tough, and, you know, very few kids nowadays go into college as far as hockey players go in as true freshmen as 18-year-olds. A lot of, you know, the majority of kids will take a year or two off, you know, physically mature. You get to live away from home. Even though you might be living with a family, you're still away from your parents. You learn how to kind of take care of yourself. Like I said, you physically mature. And, you know, by the time you go into college, you're more ready to make an impact right away. So I think, you know, as far as I go, I mean, I took 3 years off after high school. I left my senior year. So I played 4 years in Sioux City, And then when I got to school, I finally felt that I was ready. So going into school right away as an 18-year-old was never really an option for me per se, like it is, for some other really good players. But I'm definitely glad I took the route that I did.
And how did you find Sioux City? Meaning, how did you find out about that team, or was that a team you targeted, or do they sort of target you?
Oh, my older brother actually played there the year before I did.
Okay.
So they had their eye on me a little bit, and then I ended up there. I played with my older brother in Sioux City for half a season before he got traded to the Waterloo Blackhawks in the same league. So I got to play. So I played with him for half a year, and then I played against him for a year and a half for a few games every year, which is pretty exciting.
What was the biggest thing you learned in that period with Sioux City?
You know, I'd say the biggest thing, is just being a good teammate. I think, I'm a real big team guy, and especially, when you're around the same group of guys for so long, you want to get along. You want to be the guy that, maybe everyone can come to if they have a problem, and whether you're in a leadership role or whether you're not, you always want to be a good teammate.
And when do you start looking at schools, and how does that process go where it leads you to Penn State?
As far as, junior hockey goes, some kids will be committed to school before they go play junior hockey. But the majority of kids, their games get scouted by college coaches. And, sometimes they have showcases, maybe before the season starts. But there's college scouts that, every USHL game. There's some NHL scouts at USHL games because, a lot of kids get drafted out of the United States Hockey League. So as far as, the process goes, it's a lot of just, you don't necessarily know who's watching at your games, but someone's there, so you want to make as good of an impression you can make, and then the school will initiate the recruiting process, and then it all goes from there.
And you wrote in that Players Tribune piece, which you did a great job with, that you really didn't have Penn State, it sounds like, on the radar. They were a club hockey team until your dad's friend Ben, who I think works in the broadcast world along with at the time, was the Icehurst program. Is that how you found out about Penn State?
It was my last year of juniors in Sioux City where, I didn't think too much of it, but I heard that Penn State was, making the transition to Division I hockey, and I thought in the back of my head, I'd be like, oh, wow, that's, that'd be pretty cool in a couple of years to have that opportunity. I never really thought it was an opportunity for me. But I got home in the summer after my last year of juniors, and I, still didn't have a place to play. I got a call from Ben Boma, who you were talking about a little bit earlier. And he was, like I said, he was the first, like I said in that article, he was the first person that I talked to about Penn State hockey, and he kind of opened my eyes, and I started thinking about it more and more, and at first, after playing in the USHL, I didn't want to take I didn't want to kind of take a year off and play club hockey, and I was still unsure. I didn't I had a couple other things going, but Coach Godowski called me, and the first thing out of his mouth was, do you want to come to Penn State? And, I was pretty taken aback, and ended up going on a visit about a week later, and got past the barrier of not wanting to play a year of club hockey. I ended up doing it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, that's a pretty aggressive recruiting pitch when I read that. I mean, that's a risky move by Guy, because some guys would hang up the phone and say, listen, this guy, too much for me. But you hung in there, or at least said, okay, I'll take a visit, and ended up going.
Yeah, I think, he obviously said more in the conversation than just that.
Yeah.
But I think even with that comment, I could hear the passion in his voice. It wasn't necessarily, what he said. Obviously that does seem a little bit aggressive, but it was more how he said it. I could tell, he had pride in, what was to come for Penn State hockey. And, he wanted the right people in there. He wanted good people in there, not necessarily the best players on the ice, but good guys off the ice, good players on the ice, people who can set the foundation for Penn State hockey. And, you look what Coach Godowski did with, you know, the program, one of the programs up in Alaska there, what he did with the Princeton program, turning their program around, and then, you know, coming to Penn State. So it's hard to say that there was anyone else better for the job.
And I imagine that even though by nature there's a risk in doing it in terms of playing the year of club hockey, you mentioned P.J. Masiko. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing his name correctly, but guys that you felt comfortable were legitimate hockey players and willing to take the risk as well.
Yeah, you had guys come in there, you know, Nate Jensen and yep. Taylor Holstrom transferred from Mercyhurst. And, you know, I think they were both on the in the Atlantic Hockey first all-rookie team. And, you know, I think Taylor Holstrom actually got Rookie of the Year in Atlantic Hockey. So, and I remember playing against those guys in the United States Hockey League. So having those guys come in, you know, was a big, you know, a big eye opener to me as well. It made me more confident in my decision. And then another guy, PJ Musico, who's, you know, one of my best friends. I still talk to him, you know, just about every day. You know, I remember him growing up too, a big, big goofy looking Californian goalie. And then I got a chance to play with him at Penn State, and I'm glad I did.
Now, even though at the end it all works out, in that first year you mentioned that there were only a few buddies, and to use your words, some Alpha Phi girls that were at the games and that you were sleeping in Walmart parking lots when there was a rain or a weather issue. Was there ever a moment where you thought, what have I gotten myself into?
I mean, there probably were a couple times when I thought that, but I kept telling myself, hey, you know, it's just, it's 1 year of club hockey. I'm going to, you know, try to have as much fun with it as I can, get ahead on my schoolwork. And, you know, then the year after, when we go Division One, you know, obviously it's, things are going to start changing. Things are going to be a little different. And I thought in the back of my mind, hopefully we're not sleeping on the bus anymore. and luckily that, that hasn't happened, or that didn't happen, since that one night.
When was the moment you really felt like the program made the biggest leap forward in making that transition and legitimizing itself as a Division I program?
You know, it was probably a few years ago. It would have been our first season in Pagoula Ice Arena when we, you know, it was near the end of the year. We hadn't won a Big Ten game yet, and we ended up beating Michigan at home 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, even though we didn't end that year the way we wanted to, we still struggled and whatnot. But I think the guys knew at that time that, you know, we have the right guys in here. We're gonna get younger and better players in here as freshmen. But we definitely had the right core group of guys in there. And I think you know, that win, you know, really made us believe and helped us the past 2 years.
And was there ever an adjustment in terms of you had taken a few years off from when you were in high school to going from where the focus is strictly hockey in the USHL to the time management of classes, the different things that are involved with college, and obviously a full load of practices and games that you have, especially as the program goes to Division One?
You know, it's definitely tougher for some guys. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and, you know, say that it's easy for everyone, because time management definitely is, you know, is a tough skill for some people to learn. But luckily for me, growing up, I always took school pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle, who was the assistant general manager for the Carolina Hurricanes, he played college hockey at Brown and then got his law degree at Cornell. So I always had him telling me that, hey, the more serious you take school, the better you do at school, the more doors that it's going to open. So even though I did take some time off while I played in the USHL, I still stayed pretty active. I took one class in each fall semester at a community college in Sioux City, just for half a year every year, but, you know, something to keep my brain going. And luckily those three classes I took during my time out transferred into Penn State. And when I got to Penn State, like I said, luckily, you know, it was still club hockey at the time. So it gave me, you know, maybe hockey wasn't necessarily as serious as it was going to be the next 4 years I was going to be there. So I got ahead in school, got some good grades, got acclimated with all the online systems and everything else at the university, which was great. And then luckily I was able to get my master's degree in accounting while I was at school. So like I said, it just the more serious you take school and everything, it just opens more doors, and I've always taken that message to heart.
And congratulations on that with the master's degree as well, and the Smeal College there is at Penn State is no joke. So that is a legitimate degree if there ever was one. And you said a couple of guys take a few years off, so I guess it's not weird. I guess it's no different than a transfer student, but coming in and really having your de facto freshman year being 20 years old.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's definitely it's kind of unheard of in college as far as athletics go, because hockey is really the only sport where freshmen will come in 20, 21 years old and still have all 4 years of eligibility. Like you were talking about in terms of, transfers, I always tried to explain junior hockey to other students who were confused as to why I was a 21-year-old freshman. I tell them, hey, it's kind of like baseball players or football players who go play junior college baseball or football, and then they come in to a bigger school. Just for us, it was without the school, and we still have all of our eligibility left. So it's definitely different, and I think hockey is obviously unique in that respect. But like I said, I think it's great, I wouldn't have it any other way.
And you mentioned first year being the club year, and in the article you said there wasn't what would seem like a natural tension between Division I guys coming in and some of the club hockey players being there. And for those that don't know, the club team at Penn State, enormously successful, starting with Joe Bautista and his reign. How were you able to make that transition and have that collaboration sort of come together pretty seamlessly?
I think we both ended up, maybe there was a tad bit of animosity at the beginning, very minimal. We actually had tryouts that year, and some guys that were on the club team the previous year got cut. So maybe some of the older guys on the team were a little upset that, guys that they played with, the past year or two got cut. But I think after a couple weeks, there was just a mutual respect. We respected the older guys because, they had been there for a while. And, obviously we look up to them, and we had questions for them about the school and, how to go about everything. If we ever needed anything, they were great. And I think they respected a lot of the younger guys because of, we were, at the end of the day, we were more talented than they were. And we were going to help the team win games, obviously, and do whatever it took to win. Unfortunately, we didn't win the ACHA championship that year. We lost in the semifinals. But we still had a great, a great year and everything. And like I said, it was just, I think, a mutual respect for each other that helped make that transition easier.
What was your game day preparation like, Tommy? What are the things that you do? Are there superstitions? Are there certain things that you do before every game?
I always, the biggest thing for me, I like to get in a nap, eat a nice pregame meal, and then, nap for a couple hours and whatnot, and then get to the rink and maybe tape my stick, stretch out a little bit, kick the soccer ball around with the guys. Nothing that I necessarily, 100% need to do, because at the end of the day, before every game day isn't going to be perfect. There's going to be times where certain things go wrong, I don't like to say that I'm superstitious. It's more of a routine, but if that routine does get broken, I try not to let it bother me that much.
And are you one of those guys, after a win or a loss, that you can sort of put it in the rearview mirror after an hour or a certain amount of time, or is it hard for it to get rid of the feeling, especially after a loss?
I mean, it depends, because in college hockey, you play games what seem like forever apart. I mean, you play Friday and Saturday, usually against the same team, but then, normally you're not playing again until that next week. So, whatever you do on Saturday definitely stays with you longer. I mean, win or lose on Friday, if you win on Friday, you feel good about it for an hour, and then when you step foot out of the rink, you forget about it and focus on the next game. And if you lose on Friday, at least you have a chance to redeem yourself on Saturday and end the weekend the right way. But Saturday games are a little bit trickier. You win on Saturday, obviously you feel good through practice the whole week, So maybe you have a little bit more fun than normal. But if you lose on Saturday, you have a bitter taste in your mouth for just about, you know, six whole days until you can get back out there and redeem yourself. So I think it depends. It depends on which game it is, like I said, Friday or Saturday. But, you know, moving forward to pro hockey, and, you know, obviously games are more often, and so I'll have to adjust to that. But like I said, it depends on a couple things.
And it's amazing with the arena and just the Pegulas. You know, when I initially heard, and we're talking about Terry and Kim Pegula, for those that may not know, when I initially heard that they were making the donation, didn't know their names, didn't even know they were Penn State grads. And now to see them basically be the owners of the Bills and the Sabres, it's amazing. Now the whole country knows who they are. What have been, if any, your interactions with them? What have they been like? And what was it like to go into that new arena?
No, they've been nothing short of spectacular. We got a chance to see Terry and Kim a few times while we were at school. Obviously, they're extremely busy individuals, but they did a great job getting down to campus and stopping in the their ice arena and saying hi to us and wishing us well. So definitely fantastic, and I'll never forget stepping foot into that arena for the first time. It was like going from the outhouse to the penthouse. Another thing I said in that article. Mm-hmm. But for anyone that has seen the Greenberg Ice Pavilion back in the day, and then seeing Pegula Ice Arena, it's a pretty steep upgrade, I'd say. So walking in there and seeing the locker room and the ice surface and the roar zone and all the other seats and everything was definitely something I'll never forget.
Greenberg was cozy. I think that would be one word to...
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah. Now, you talked about you want to keep on playing, so obviously this Australia trip is part of, or the beginning of that. What are the next steps? What are the options that you look at?
Now that I don't play college hockey anymore, the NCAA, kind of has to have their hands off now, so... at this point you gotta get an agent. A lot of guys do getting agents. Guys have advisors and stuff throughout their collegiate career and stuff. But once you graduate or sign, things get a little bit more serious between you and your agent. So obviously put myself out there if there's anything I can do personally as far as maybe emailing a coach or something like that. So I'm working a little bit. I know my agent's working. I know Coach Godowski and our two assistant coaches, Coach Fisher and Coach Lindsay, they're all trying to help me out. I think there's definitely a few options out there for me right now, but at the end of the day, I want to pick the best one and go to the place that I'm going to get the most opportunity.
Yeah, and you don't have to go into the options, but do you look at minor league affiliates? Do you look at independent league teams? How does that sort of process go?
Oh, definitely. The East Coast Hockey League, is a great hockey league as far as development. And, if I ended up playing there, that would be great. And then there's also a lot of options overseas in Europe. There's leagues in just about every country over there. So finding the best fit, going to a city where you feel, where you're going to feel as comfortable as, you think that you'll feel. Maybe go into a team where a guy or two on the team or have some sort of connection with is definitely something guys look for. But like I said, I just want to go somewhere, where I'm going to play and get some opportunity. And at the end of the day, I'm going to have to do something with that opportunity.
Not that you would have to make a decision based on this, but is there a major disparity between playing domestically versus internationally in terms of salary?
I mean, that's definitely something guys look at. In Europe, I know a bunch of guys that have played in Europe, and they end up making tax-free money over there. And really, the only fee they pay on that is when they transfer it to their American bank account and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely in terms of salary, there's definitely positives to maybe playing in Europe and stuff like that. And I know some guys do base their decisions around that. So obviously, this is the whole pro hockey thing is is new to me. I'm still in the process of trying to figure it out. So, I mean, I can really just tell you what I've heard from other guys.
Yeah, and not that you shouldn't keep on pursuing this, but do you ever look at coaching and broadcasting as a possible outlet?
You know, even though I did, you know, I did get my master's degree in accounting, I'd love to use it at some point, maybe in some sort of general manager role or something like that in terms of, you know, salary cap and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know if I could ever do one of those 9-to-5 desk jobs. I think I don't know if I'd be happy being away from the game of hockey because it's really it's given me so much. It's been so good to me. Most importantly, I've met so many good people through the game. And, you know, I think that's the thing I would probably miss the most.
And what do you do? I know you're doing some camps. How do you keep yourself in shape off-season-wise in terms of just to stay fresh when the opportunity comes?
Luckily, you know, the suburbs of Chicago are hotbeds for, you know, for hockey players. You know, there's a lot of great hockey players around the Chicagoland area. So finding ice with or getting on the ice with good players isn't very hard to do, and you know, luckily there's a lot of good off ice trainers around here as well to help with that aspect. So you know, I've got a good skating coach and a good strength and conditioning coach off the ice. So staying in shape, obviously off the ice is key, but most importantly is you know, being on the ice, because the best work for skating and shooting and stuff like that, at the end of the day, that's it's going to be not in the weight room.
Yeah, I would think it's a balance in the weight room too, because it's not just, you know, the NFL offensive lineman that's looking to put on weight and bench press 400. I mean, you want to be agile, particularly skating wise, and being able to move around in the corners in small places.
Exactly. You know, a lot of guys will go you know, try to lift a lot of weight and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you want to work on a lot of injury prevention stuff. You want to get stronger, but at the same time, you don't want to sacrifice any quickness or, you know, any agility that you have. Because at the end of the day, skating is the most important thing in today's game. So you don't necessarily need to be the biggest guy or the strongest guy on the ice to thrive, but the guys that thrive are usually the guys who are the best skaters and who are the strongest on their skates.
A few more before we let you go, Tommy, and appreciate the time. I was at the game at Madison Square Garden against Michigan back in January. I know you guys have played at some pretty cool arenas. What was that like?
It was awesome. I mean, just knowing, I think in the back of my mind, you know, that my dad played a bunch of games in there too, all the way throughout his career, was something pretty special. You know, will I get the chance to play in that arena in an NHL uniform? I would say probably not. But you know, being able to play there, against Michigan in that type of atmosphere, you know, with the guys that I played with, twice, actually, we got to play two games. We played against, it was Colgate or Cornell.
Cornell, I think. Yeah, I was at that one as well. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
One of those two.
Being able to play them and then play Michigan last year, being able to play two games in there was something very special.
You mentioned your dad playing there. I guess if I do the quick math, you would have been five when the Rangers won the Cup. Do you remember any of that, or does Dad share those memories with you?
I mean, he definitely shares them, because I don't remember much. I think the extent of my memory there is actually being, I think for whatever reason, I remember being on the float the day of the parade. You know, I have the smallest memory of that. And unfortunately, as far as my whole dad's playing career goes, you know, he retired when I was 9 years old, and you know, I really don't remember too much, unfortunately, from his playing career. But every now and again, my brothers and I will pop in the old VHS tapes of my dad's highlights, seeing him score goals from the blue line and, you know, from behind the net and on breakaways, stuff like that is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, and it's funny, and I'm from New York, a Rangers fan, and I don't remember it either because I'm only a few years older than you. But I imagine his coaching career with Pittsburgh, that would be a more vivid memory.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, unfortunately, he didn't have the best team to work with back then.
Right.
But, you know, he definitely did his best. And, you know, I like to think, maybe he deserves a little credit for, the two Stanley Cups.
That's right. That's right. It comes full circle. But it put you in a position. I mean, when you're the Penguins coach's son in any or kid, yeah, I mean, that is certainly getting used to being under a microscope.
Oh, definitely. I think, that's something my dad has preached to me my entire life is, you know, especially in the position that our family's in, you know, someone's always watching. There's always people out there that want you to screw up or want you to do something poorly so they can get on your back and make a big deal about it and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you got to be smart. You got to make good choices and you got to be a good person. So luckily, I like to think I was raised the right way. So thank you to both my parents. But yeah, like I said, you just got to be careful.
Do you share your dad's passion on the horse racing front?
Not really. I think, that's just one thing where, we haven't, both my brothers and myself just, I've kind of stayed away. It's kind of my dad's thing. And,
right.
We're not too interested in it right now. Obviously, that might change, but, as of right now, we let my dad have his fun with that, and we kind of stay out of his way.
That's good. You know, you got to differentiate at some point. Well, this has been great, Tommy. Thanks so much for the time. We'll be following and appreciate all the insight. Wishing you continued success as you get your pro career going.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Jacob. It was a pleasure to be on with you.
Thanks again to Tommy. Really good guy. Even better news to report. After our interview, Tommy was signed as a winger for the Alaska Aces, the ECHL affiliate of the Vancouver Canucks. Great fan base up there, and they passionately support the team. We wish Tommy only the best as he begins his professional hockey career. That's all for now on this episode of Let's Talk. I'm Jacob Wilkins saying so long, and we'll see you next time.